And I see this little howler monkey in like the tree line. And he's looking like at me. And this guy was like, I don't know, like the size of a medium-sized dog.
I grab onto Steven. I say, Steven, stop. Steven, stop. And then I just fall and tumble off this bike.
We're getting into there, and we're on this mini bus, and my stomach just turns. And I realize I have to get off this bus. And I have to get off this bus right now.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Laura Wexler.
And I am Jessica Hankin. And this week on the podcast, Embarrassments Abroad. Three storytellers. Thank God the folks back home can't see them.
Yeah.
So before
we had a moment like that, right? Where you're like, I'm so glad I'm really far from home and no one knows that I did this or this is happening to me.
No, I do most things embarrassing
you stay
very
local.
Close.
You stay local. You really stay local.
When I'm away, I live my best life and my best self. Save all of my...
You keep your crazy local. Yeah. That's right. Before we get started, today we want to thank the Park School. They're an independent, co-ed, non-sectarian, progressive school in North Baltimore. They're a great sponsor of the Stoop podcast. Yep. So this first storyteller has a great tale about trying to have some fun abroad, leave your troubles at home, and finding out that
wherever
often
you go,
doesn't work.
There you are. It's Megan Shett, who is one of my most favorite people on this earth.
Besides me.
Oh, yeah. That's to be assumed.
Sometimes people need reminders.
Take a listen.
We're talking about travel stories today, and I thought I would take you to Costa Rica with me. You're welcome. It's a really beautiful place. When I was in college, I always wanted to do study abroad, and I wasn't able to. I transferred schools. I lost credits. I felt like it was going to just put me off the path, so I didn't do study abroad. But I graduated from college, and my friend Sarah said to me, listen, I just moved to Costa Rica. I'm a waitress. I wake up to ripe mangoes falling on my corrugated tin roof, and howler monkeys and the Pacific Ocean are my sounds to go to sleep. You should come here. And I was like, yeah, I should. So at the time, I had just graduated. I moved back to Catonsville with my parents. I was very unhappy in my job, and so I started saving cash in a roller skate to save up to go. And then I got a call from Sarah probably 2 months later saying, I'm leaving Costa Rica. I'm bored. I'm going home. And I said, well, I'm still coming. So that's what I'm doing, and I'm sticking to it. So I labeled my parents' whole house with little, like, words in Spanish so I could try to remember my high school Spanish. And this was probably in 2003, and their refrigerator still says congelador, which I have never heard someone actually use in Spanish. And I went. I saved up my cash. I bought a ticket. I went. I went to this little, beautiful, magical mountain town called Orosi in the rolling hills outside of San Jose. And before I left, I made this list. It was, I'm going to do all of these things. And I was 23 at the time. I'm going to learn how to dance salsa. I'm going to learn Spanish. I'm going to live with a host family. I'm going to take a Latin lover. I'm going to ride down the coast in a motorcycle. And of course, I forgot this list of crazy shit that only happens to me, which became a much more robust list. So I moved to this little mountain town. I stayed with a really lovely, very sweet host family, and I fell in love with this really goofy Nicaraguan statistics professor who was a highly functioning Asperger. And I would say, and you know, I feel like it's wrong to say that Roche suffered from Asperger's. I think he would say he was blessed with it. You know, he was so unique. It's like he didn't even understand the social rules. So he felt absolutely free of them. And it made him a real delight. And we just fell in love. And I remember going to this waterfall. We were skinny dipping. And he's like, I'm just going to paint you with mud designs. And I was like, yes, that sounds great. And then there were these other things where we had taken a vacation from vacation and went to the beach. And I'm looking around, and there are all these, like, super hot surfers. And they have these, like, Australian and British accents, and they're all tan. And there's Roger with his little belly and a fanny pack and aqua socks on. And I was like, damn, I probably should have been more specific on my list and written, like, cool Latin lover. But it was pretty awesome. And I remember reading a quote, I think it was Jack Kornfield, that said, wherever you go, there you are. And I thought, duh, that's like a memo from the no shit department. But I think I think what that means now that I'm like almost 40 is like you take your problems and your joys with you everywhere you go. So even if you have this idea that you're going to go on a vacation, it's going to be magical, really you just want to get away from your problems, and then your problems follow you. And Roche and I started like really kind of like getting into a fight. I did not realize this at the time, but I had been there for 4 months. And I have been for my, like really since the time I was 19, on birth control for a hormonal disorder that I was born with. And my stash had run out. So I had to switch, and I switched to the wrong ones. And I don't know if any of you ladies in here have ever been on the wrong birth control pill, but it is a nightmare. It's just like Tear City, or maybe some of you are partnered. Yes, you know what I'm talking about. It's the worst. Oh, yeah, I'm seeing, is that your partner? I see him nodding. Yeah, it's the worst. You're like, it's like a monster inhabits you. I imagine that's what menopause is like. I hear that's what it's going to be like. Anyway, oh, God, I see other people nodding. Shit. Anyway, yeah, that is another show. That's a good theme. That's a good idea. Anyway, so I called home, and my mother said, well, I sent your dad to go talk to, like, our family doctor, and she wouldn't give him the birth control prescription. She said, I went to the doctor to get this prescription filled for you, but she wouldn't do it, so dad went and yelled at her, and he wrote dad a prescription for your birth control. And I remember coming back, talking to her, and she's, like, super Baltimore, and she goes, yeah, I haven't seen you for a while. I think the last time your dad was here and I was writing him a birth control prescription. That was pretty funny. I was like, yeah, you think? Anyway, it would be even funnier if you knew my dad. So anyway, Roche and I are like just like not getting along. And I had befriended this Swedish girl named Marianne. And she was like, come on, we're going to go like take a girl's trip. We're going to go to the rainforest. It's going to be great. So we go to the rainforest and they tell you, pack a bag, have lunch, because there's a swimming beach in the middle of hiking through the forest. So when you get to the middle, you can have like lunch and swim in the ocean and whatever. So Marianne and I are like on our little girls' trip, our other vacation from vacation, and we're hiking around and we see these howler monkeys. And they were awesome. And we probably stayed there for like an hour. We were just like watching them play and listening to them and whatnot. So we turn the corner, and we didn't realize, I don't think we would have sat there for an hour had we realized the beach was like literally right around the corner. So we're like, oh, the beach, okay, fine, we'll hang out on this beach. So we go, and I put my towel down, and I start to unpack my backpack, which has lunch in it, and I throw my cookies down, and I see this little howler monkey in like the tree line, and he's looking like at me. And this guy was like, I don't know, like the size of a medium-sized dog, right? And he's looking like directly at me. So I kind of went like a little to the right, and he went to the right. And I was like, did this, and he did that too. And I had like food in my hands, and he started running towards me. And I was like, I'm going to have to get into a physical fight with this monkey in front of all of these ecotourists. Like, they're going to think I'm the worst person ever. And then I like, you know those moments where you're scared and like all this stuff flashes through your mind at one time? And I was like, am I going to win? Is it going to win? Like, I'm definitely bigger, but it has animal instincts. And like, all these people like in their keens are going to like think I'm so awful because I'm going to have to fight this monkey. And so it runs up to the bottom of my towel, and I look down at it, and it's looking up at me, and I just drop my food, and the monkey snatched it and ran back into the tree line. And I was like, oh, my God. I was like, just take the sandwich. I don't care. I'm sorry the plastic might kill you, but, like, better than you and me getting into a fist fight. So I go back. We're having, like, you know, still having, like, a lovely time with Marianne. We go back to the city of San Jose. I try one more thing. I go to a coffee farm, which is like another insane story. It was run by a bunch of American expats, and I stayed at their house. It was with the Worldwide Organization of Organic Farms, but all I did was cry the whole time I was there. And I didn't, they were also like super, super religious, and I didn't want to be like, guys, I think I'm just on the wrong birth control pill, and it's going to take a couple of days to like get out of my system. Like, I didn't feel, it's funny that I feel fine telling a bunch of strangers this, but at 23, I did not feel comfortable telling this to people whose house I was living in. And after that, I just decided it was time to pack up my things and pack up myself and pack up all my problems and head back to Baltimore. Thanks.
Oh,
Oh, that was so fun.
What I love about this story is the way she depicted the eco-tourists. Like, all she had to say was, in their Tevas. And I was like, oh, yeah, I got it. It's vivid. Got that picture.
Oh, she makes me laugh. Everything about her is so fun and funny. And she's just got such good light. You want people like that in your life. Just like you. I mean, you're also that way.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for tacking me on to that compliment for Megan.
We want to thank the Golden West for being one of our sponsors today. They are a delicious restaurant located on the Avenue in Hamden. They have the best tater tots, really. The Drew, which I think is their vegan, their longtime vegan breakfast. I love that place. Yeah.
Way to name check that. Yeah. Good for you. Thanks. And we also want to thank Baltimore Magazine. They actually have a new podcast, weekly podcast called Local Flavor Live, which is about the dining scene in Baltimore. You can find out about that at baltimoremagazine.com. Also, all of their articles about this complicated and wonderful city are there. So this next story, told by Kelly Drummond, is from a show that we did in partnership with some Peace Corps students who are at the School of Public Health here at Hopkins. And
so a bunch of hippies.
Yeah, do-gooders.
Okay.
They're more ambitious than hippies. They're ambitious do-gooders. But anyway, this story is just a slice of life from what it's like to be a Peace Corps volunteer, as they call it, PCV. And if you're a return Peace Corps volunteer, you're an RPCV. Did you know that?
Oh,
that's how they do.
Good, nice.
Take a listen.
Hi, my name is Kelly. I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Uganda from 2015. Thank you. 2015 to 2017. I do not have a poop story, but this is my ringer story. It's a story I tell everyone about. This is defined my service. So I lived in this tiny little village called Bikira, and it was, I don't know, a couple miles from the main town. So I had a motorcycle guy, a Boda Boda driver. His name is Steven. He's my best friend in the whole village. So I call Steven anytime I need to go into town. Peace Corps volunteers are not allowed to ride motorcycles. For a very good reason, because they're dangerous. But I call Steven, and I say, Steven, I need to go into town. I need to go to the printer. I had a girls' club at the time. We talked about HIV prevention, safe sex practices, malaria prevention, and I needed a handout for the club meeting. So I said, I need to go to the printer. He comes over, and I'm a very respectable woman in my community, okay? I wear long skirts below the knee. I sit side saddle anywhere I go, because I am a respectful Niabo, respectful woman. So Steven comes over, I have my bag, sit side saddle on the motorcycle, and we go into town on the back roads. Not a problem. I do this all the time. We turn on the road perpendicular to the main road. It's paved. It's kind of windy that day. And I kind of like feel myself a little slipping a little bit. So I kind of shift my weight on the bike, and then I feel something catch right in the wheel. And I know for an instant, as soon as I feel it, I know my skirt is completely in the wheel. I grab onto Steven. I say, Steven, stop. Steven, stop. And then I just fall and tumble off this bike. Steven thinks he's just killed me. He's freaking out. He's like, oh, my God, Kelly, what happened? Now, obviously, what happened? I fell off the bike. And also, side note, breasts are not sexualized at all in Uganda. What is sexualized are legs, bare legs, trousers, shorts, or just, you know, legs, very sexualized. So there I am with my whole skirt in this wheel of the motorcycle, and my legs are out for the world to see. I've never felt more naked in my life. Thank the good Lord I wore underwear that day because it wasn't always a given. I am sitting on the main road in my pink underwear, my legs out, feeling like I'm just about to have a meltdown. I'm just screaming, not because my foot is bleeding, not because everyone just saw it, but because everyone's looking at my legs. Thankfully, a nice man from a fabric store came out with a big piece of pink cloth and just covered me. I was like, oh, thank you, finally. Another guy from a hardware store comes out with this giant knife and just starts sawing me out of this bike. I stand up, flash everyone with my butt, wrap the fabric around my waist as soon as I can. Everyone's around me, oh, Bambi, sorry, are you okay? This happens a lot. This happens all the time. I was like, this shouldn't happen all the time. Steven goes, Kelly, go down to the hair salon. I know the women, they'll clean you up. I was like, okay. I have my first aid kit in my bag because I am a responsible Peace Corps volunteer. So I go and sit down, patch my foot. The woman comes around from the back. Not only is it a hair salon, but they rent out dresses. They rent out dresses for occasions, for weddings, birthday parties, whatever. She comes out from the back with this giant floor-length, bedazzled, spaghetti-strapped, lavender ball gown. Like, it is huge. And I look at it, I'm like, no. But then I kind of look down at the fabric I'm holding around my waist. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll do it. So I step into the dress, and they're zipping me up. And they go, ah, too fat, too fat. You are too fat. So I start crying because now I'm not only my foot bleeding, I fell off a bike, and now I'm too fat. So they finally like put it on over the shirt I'm wearing. They zip me up into it. And they say, okay, have a nice day. I'm like, nice day. Thank you. I walk out in this giant ball gown. I look at Steve and I say, I still need to go to the printer. I walk in with just like a queen wave. And I say, hello, everyone. Steven takes me home at the end of the day. He looks at me and says, sit like a man this time. So, sad saddle, holding up the skirt. Thanks, guys.
I love the image in this of, you know, that legs are apparently a very taboo thing to reveal. And that when she got in this motorcycle accident, she was then covered up with this taffeta ball gown. Hilarious. This next story, also told at the same show, this guy got up right away just burning to tell this story, which is an epic saga of an illness he had while serving as a Peace Corps in the Republic of Georgia.
My name is Jason. I am a nursing student across the street, and I served in the Republic of Georgia for 3 years. I extended for a year. For no reason, I didn't actually get married. I just extended for a year. My story, when I first got to Georgia, one of the most important things they gave to me and they gave to every other Peace Corps volunteer were these giant metal cylinders that filtered our water. And I thought, all right, cool, I'm going to use this every day. And they told us every day, do not drink the random spring water, because in Georgia, there's spring water everywhere. And Georgia is known for their beautiful mountains and their beautiful water. And I, every time we get to a spring, I would say, no, thank you. That's lovely, but I'm going to drink my own water. And everyone knew after a little while, Jason has his own water. And they stopped offering it also. So one day, a couple Peace Corps volunteers and I go up to this mountain village, the most beautiful village that I've ever seen. To this day, it is still one of the most beautiful places that I have ever spent time. It's called Shatili, and it's up along the border with Chechnya, and it's this just absolutely beautiful village. But we're there, and I run out of water. Another Peace Corps volunteer also runs out of water. And there's one shop up there, and we don't realize we're out of water until we're very drunk, and it's about 10 o'clock at night, and the one store is already closed. So we can't get any water, but we're very drunk, and our minds are only thinking of water. We should get water. So we see some of the Georgian kids. They're drinking water out of one of the springs. We decide we're going to go and try this also. So we go up to there. We drink some water, and everything's fine. We're hydrated, and we're feeling great, and we go back home. A couple days later, I'm with my site mate, Gina, and we're at a special meeting that's in a different town. We're taking a bus back from there. We have to go through the capital back to our village. As we're getting into the main city, Tbilisi, in the capital, we're getting into there, and we're on this minibus, and my stomach just turns. And I realize I have to get off this bus. And I have to get off this bus right now. So I yell, stop the bus, stop the bus, stop the bus right now. And my site mate, she's sitting a couple seats away, and she looks at me and says, Jason, what's the matter? And I said, I can't talk. And I run. And I jump off the bus, and I realize that I've stopped the bus in the middle of the busiest intersection of the entire city. I look around me, and across the crazy busy intersection, there's a gas station. And in Georgia, it is required that every gas station has a public bathroom. So I think, that's where I'm going. And I look over there, and I realize there's 8 lanes of high-speed traffic that I have to cross, and there is no other way to get over there. And I realize, I can't go over there. So I'm looking around, and I realize there's a little tiny park right next to me. I think, perfect. This is wonderful. Don't want to do this, but I have to. And I look over, and there is the most glorious bush that I have ever seen in my entire life. And I head straight for it. And I dive in there, and I have my backpack on. And as a good Peace Corps volunteer, I have wet wipes in my bag, and I am fine. So as I'm getting out of the bushes, and I'm about to stand up, I look to my right as the park goes on, and it opens up to the right. No more bushes, but a couple benches. And I realize there is a man, and he's on the phone, and he is walking right towards me. And he is walking, and he's talking, and I'm thinking, uh-oh, this is not great. Now my host family gets to hear about how I got arrested in the Capitol for doing something that everyone shouldn't be doing. So I realize that I have no other option than to stand up. So I start to stand up, and I realize he looks over. I look over at him, and he sits down on one of the benches. He has no idea that I'm in the bushes. He has not seen me. He is having his own conversation, is in his own world, and I am thanking God at this point. So I grab my backpack, and I step out of the bushes, and he turns and looks at me. And we make eye contact, and I just keep walking by. And so as I see the bus stop, it's if I go across the street, but I can go under this way, so I don't have to pass all the traffic. I see a bus stop, and I think I can grab that bus stop, and I know what bus to get to the Peace Corps office. So I'm heading that way. I'm almost there, and then I see a taxi driver. I start arguing with the taxi driver about how much the price is to get to the Peace Corps office, and my stomach turns again. And I start yelling at the taxi driver, he's not doing anything wrong. But in my mind, everything is going against me. So eventually I leave him, and I start heading towards the bus again, and I go underground, and as I start going in this underpass, my stomach turns again, and I realize, well, there's no more bushes, and I have to go again. This is great. So I look down the stairs, and I see an old electrical room. As I'm going, and I realize that there's no other option around me, nothing at all. And I go down to this old electrical room, and the door has been knocked off its hinges, and inside is the most disgusting room that I have ever stepped foot in my life. And yes, I stepped in there, and I was out of wet wipes, so I ended up ripping out pages of my journal that were empty, but you got to do what you got to do. And so I step in there, I do what I need to do, and as I step out of that room and I grab my backpack and start running towards the bus, I make eye contact with a woman who's walking away from the bus stop, wondering, why is that man coming out of that room? And I just keep walking to the bus. And I think, all right, great. I'm almost there. I just got to get on the 150. If I get on the number 150 bus, I am home free. As soon as I get up there, I jump on the number 150 bus. And I realize as the bus is turning the wrong way and going across the bridge, I took the wrong bus. So I get off the bus, and eventually I do make it back to the Peace Corps volunteers or Peace Corps office. And I run in there because right as soon as I'm walking in, my stomach turns yet again. And I have a real bathroom and everything's fine and it's great. And then I go up to the Peace Corps doctor's office and I talk to them. And she says, you have Giardia. I think, oh, great. And that was the first time I had Giardia in the Peace Corps. So thank you.
So my understanding is that everyone gets sick when they're in the Peace Corps, right? Isn't that like that's
yeah,
the
but
assumption.
I think there's like degrees.
Yeah. This was
Giardia is just like it's really bad. Yeah. It's not like
Your run of the mill.
It's not
diarrhea.
Just like it's not just like traveler diarrhea. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, we won't get too graphic about it, but we want to thank the wine source. That was the worst segue I've ever done. We won't get graphic about the Giardia. Instead, we'll talk about the wine source.
Yeah. Although I wonder, you know, there is something to be said for alcohol.
Well, if you drink wine, you don't drink water, you're not going to get Giardia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there you go. That's the segue. I'm going to retroactively insert that
segue.
Nice. We also want to let you know that we have a great season of live shows that you can find out about.
Really do. Almost every month a show.
That's right. So we would love to see you out there. And if you can leave us a review at Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts out, sure would be nice. And last, we want to thank Maureen Harvey, who never embarrasses us.
No,
or herself.
Nor herself. She keeps her shit tight,
just like this podcast, usually. Good night. Goodbye. See you next week.